perturbative quantum correction. And so, let's just recall that at the end of last lecture, we derived how the conductivity changes due to quantum effects in different spatial dimensions. So we got the sensor. So let me just write it out here. And so, and L max, that's either, this is the smaller scale of the phase breaking time, right? So after which electrons acquire random phases and interference is suppressed, or the system size in case electrons stay coherent when they move through the whole system. This was for one-dimensional system. For two-dimensional system, we got the following answer. So here, this correction goes as a log of L max, and finally, in three dimensions, quantum correction is small and becomes as the system size or the phase coherence lengths become larger. Yeah. 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 Here it should be minimum, of course, right? So physically, this is the scale at which you should cut off the integral, right? So whatever happens first. So it was just a typo. Yeah. Thanks. Okay. So. And in general, this kind of correction is called weak localization correction. Because essentially this is the first sign of localization, right? But it's still weak, so you can treat it perturbatively. Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. So let's now try to understand how this results can explain the puzzling experimental observations that we started from, right? So first observation was that Ohm's law breaks down, right? Ohm's law breaks down, and effectively your conductivity starts depending on the sample size. And clearly this formula explains that, right? So clearly it tells you that as you go to bigger and bigger samples, your conductivity gets smaller, right? And this effect is especially pronounced in one and two dimensions where these corrections are big. Right, so this makes sense. So second fact, is that conductivity as a function of temperature, right, shows anomalous dependence. So conductivity gets suppressed as you lower the temperature, right? So this goes against classical intuition that you get from the Drude formula. But let's try to understand what this formulas would predict us. So what does temperature do, right? So temperature induces, let's say, phonons or other thermal fluctuations, right? Which would break phase coherence of electrons, right? And phase coherence times usually. So I'm not going to derive it, but it's quite intuitive that phase coherence times goes as some power law of temperature. Right, so at zero temperature, when thermal fluctuations are completely suppressed, phase coherence time would be infinite, right? So now if I'm measuring the resistivity of my sample when it's very large, right, such that its size is greater than this phase breaking length, right? This formula tells me that the conductivity I would measure would depend on the phase breaking length here, right? So it should be this quantity, square root d tau phi. And clearly, right, this scale grows as a power law of temperature, right? So this tells me that this correction becomes more and more important at lower temperatures. Okay, so this means that this formula would predict that delta sigma becomes greater, right, as you decrease the temperature, right? So this is completely consistent with the observation, right? So as you lower the temperature, your sample becomes less and less conducting, right? So this formula also explains this second puzzling experimental fact. Now, the third fact that I brought up was anomalous magnetoresistance. And so, and to understand how these corrections change as we apply magnetic field, we need to do a little bit more work. So, but physically the picture is quite simple. Okay, so what does magnetic field do? So magnetic field essentially breaks the time reversal invariance, right? And strictly speaking, when electron diffuses, right? And we saw that the most important trajectories are the ones which cross itself, right? And this whole correction comes from the interference of some trajectory and its time reverse partner, right? But now, if I apply magnetic field, these two trajectories would pick up slightly different phase due to magnetic field, right? Because time reversal is broken, and the phase difference would be given essentially by the area of the loop, right? Essentially, it should be given by the flux, right, through this loop, right? So I can write it as the area of the loop times magnetic field divided by the flux quantum, right? So flux quantum in this case is hc over e. Okay, so then using this fact, right, I can see that the trajectories which enclose area that is small, such that delta phi is much less than 2 pi, right? Those trajectories would still contribute to the quantum interference. But bigger trajectories would not, right? Because they would pick up different random phases and start, and this constructive interference would be quenched. So using this simple fact, right, I can calculate magnetoresistance. So let me consider the following quantity. So let me consider difference of the conductivity with some magnetic field minus conductivity at zero field. Okay, and then for this interference correction, I would have the same formula, right, that I had before, except I know that for the case of magnetic field, right, I need to multiply it by the phase, right, which is cosine of this phase. Okay, so it would be cosine And so, and when writing this, I took into account that the typical area that an electron encloses after it diffuses for time t is d times t. Right, so it's just given by the diffusion coefficient and time. So that's the typical size that encloses. So this is the interference term which comes at zero magnetic field, and this one comes at non-zero field. So let me make this clearly, right, at small times, so when time is less than hc over 2eb times d, right, these two terms cancel, right, but if I go above this time, right, then this one oscillates and I can forget about it, and this one stays, right? So for this quantity, I can then write, I can simply substitute it by the integral right, so I can just change the lower limit of integration to this time. Let me call it TB. So this thing is going to be TB, right? So TB to tau max dt over dt to power d over 2. And so, let me now specify to the case of two special dimension where this effect is most pronounced. So for the case of d equal 2, when I calculate it, I get simply vf lambda f over d. Right, and you can check that you when you take this integral, what you find is log of L max squared over LB squared, where LB is the essentially cyclotron radius, right, which we will encounter many times in the next lecture, so which is goes as inverse square root of the magnetic field, right? So this is magnetic length. Right, so it's alternatively it's the if you cover area with such linear size, you enclose one flux quantum, right? So that's another way of viewing it. So and we have our answer, right? So this is our magnetic resistance. So now I can plot conductivity as a function of magnetic field. Okay, and this tells me that as I increase magnetic field, conductivity grows as a log, right? And then it would saturate once the magnetic length becomes comparable to the phase breaking time. Okay, so this is what is important here is that the scale right here, it's set by essentially magnetic length being of the order of the phase breaking time, right? So which is usually very large at low temperatures, right? So this is quite a puzzling effect, because if you just think about Drude formula, right, there the only scale, right, is the mean free path, right? So you only from the Drude formula magnetic resistance, would be such that the conductivity changes when magnetic field is quite strong, such that magnetic length is of the order of the mean free path, right? So and here effect is clearly qualitatively different, right? So it happens at very weak magnetic field, and moreover, its sign is wrong, right? So it's magnetic field increases conductivity because it suppresses quantum interference. Okay? So, do you guys have any questions about this part? Yes, yes, okay, yeah, good point. So essentially, right, so let's remember where this formula came from, right? So it came from the fact that after time t, right, we have some probability to return to the initial point where we started diffusion, right? And there is also a trajectory which we go around in the opposite direction. And so, if we have time reversal, right, these trajectories have the same amplitude A, right, such that because of quantum mechanical interference, we have enhancement of the return probability which is given by 2a squared, right? So but now, of course, if we turn on magnetic field, right, then one of the trajectories would pick up a phase plus phi because the loop is enclosed, let's say, counterclockwise, right? And the other one would acquires the opposite phase, right? Because it just goes backwards, so it should be minus a phi, right? And when we consider now interference of these terms, right? So we should consider this, right? And then it's going to be just 2a squared plus 2a squared cosine phi. Okay, so you see that the only change you need to make is to multiply the interference term by the cosine phi, right? And moreover, we know that phi, right, is roughly given by the magnetic field times the area of the loop divided by the flux quantum, right? So and then I just took into account that area of the loop is dt, right? Because when I diffused for time t, I move by distance square root dt. Mm-hmm. Okay, so all clear. Good. So now let's think a little bit more about what we did here, right? So what was this expansion that we did? So where was the small parameter? Right, so and let's look again at the case d equal 2 because it's most telling. Right, so let's look at this correction. So okay, so let me rewrite this a little bit. So let me use the fact that diffusion coefficient is this in two dimension, right? So it's just expressed in terms of Fermi velocity and scattering time. And then I can rewrite it as follows. And so, and I'll be making estimates, so I won't worry about factors of two and so on. So this is Fermi tau. This is just the mean free path. Or I could rewrite it as follows. I could say that this is 1 over KFL. Log L max over LD, right? So, but what is this? So from the Drude formula, you know that that the conductivity or in two dimensions the conductance, right, sigma equal g is just e squared over h kfl. Right, so this formula tells me that the correction, relative correction to the conductivity goes as one over dimensionless conductance, right? So it's one over g in units of e squared over h, right, times the log. Right, so this whole approach is quantitative and works well only if this correction is perturbative, right? So this must be much less than one. Right, so this in fact this is an expansion in the inverse conductance, right? And it completely breaks down when the conductance becomes of the order one or of the order of e squared over h. Right, so this completely breaks down. Right, at this point, quantum correction becomes very strong, right? And you see that the interference effect starts to dominate, right? So something really, really dramatic happens with your electronic wave functions. Right, so and you see that in one dimension and in two dimension this is inevitable, right? That at some point your conductance would really drop, right, and states would become localized. So in one dimension we saw that, right? So we saw that all states are localized beyond some localized beyond some scale, let me call it xi, so that would be the localization length, right? And above this scale, conductance, right, or the conductance would be exponentially small, right? So it goes like that. So that's what we derived from the Landauer formalism. So, thinking about this formula for two dimensions, we can guess that something similar must happen also in two dimensions always. Because let's consider this formula. So delta sigma is minus one over g, right? And let me drop this units of e squared over h. So let me put them to one. So log L max over LD. Right, so you see that this correction would become of the order one, even if I started from very large conductance. You can see that if I take L max, which is exponentially large in the conductance, right, you see that the delta sigma over sigma becomes of the order minus one. Right, so it tells you that even if you started from two-dimensional system, which is looks metallic, right? If you go to large enough scale, this metallic behavior would stop, right? And you would go insulating, right? So which tells you that in two dimensions, all states are also localized, right? All states are localized. Perhaps on some exponentially large length scale. Large length scale. And so, and if you think about it, this is quite a powerful statement, right? So it tells you that metallic state is always unstable in spatial dimensions which are less or equal than 2. Metal is unstable phase. So now higher dimensions are different. So in that we saw already with this perturbative example in 3 dimensions, right? So in 3 dimensions we saw that if you start from a phase which is a good metal, right? If you look at the formula above, you see that the quantum correction becomes not so important, right? So it becomes smaller as you increase the system size, right? So in 3D things are different. So metal is stable. Now, on the other hand, intuitively you can expect that an insulator, that a localized phase should be also possible in 3 dimensions if the disorder is strong enough, right? So now it's not so obvious because so strong disorder would cause localization. This seems intuitive, but actually proving it is very, very challenging, and that's what Anderson did, and this is part of the reason why he got his Nobel Prize for proving that localized state and in 3 dimension exists. So because of this, we can see that, you know, two phases are possible, and this means that in 3 dimension, in principle, metal insulator transition is possible, right? So in 1 and 2 dimension, we always have an insulator no matter what, so there is no phase transition, right? But here, in 3 dimension, we can have metal insulator transition. So which parameter should we vary to study this transition? So one option would be to vary disorder, right? So keep chemical potential constant and vary disorder strength. Which is one possibility. But another possibility is to change chemical potential, right? And naturally, so as a function of very chemical potential mu, right? Or the Fermi energy EF, let me call it that actually. Right, so it's natural to expect that if you have, so let me make a picture. So let me draw a density of states as a function of energy. Right, so then of course when I have a band, right, I have many states in the middle of the band and I have fewer states in the tails. Right, so it's natural to expect that if you have some disorder would more easily localize you at energies where there are fewer states, right? Because they hybridize less with each other and so on, right? So you expect that states in the tails of the band would be localized if the disorder is strong enough. But in the middle of the band, they would be extended, and so and you would be dealing with a metal if you put your Fermi energy in this interval. Now you can guess that the states in the tails would be localized because, you know, of course you can have rare fluctuations of the potential which just create bound state below the band bottom, right? So that's what these states in the tails are like.
The first question is, what is the relationship between localization and the unstable and stable also, is also, I don't get why you get in two dimensions you have the other one.
Why what? Wait, so let me start with the first question. So you see, what does it mean to be a metal, right? It means that that it conducts, and if you make it bigger, it keeps conducting, right? So, but if it, you know, clearly we saw that in one and two dimensions, right, as you make a sample bigger, at some point it just stops conducting, right? And that tells you that your states, your electronic states, are no longer free propagating plane waves, right? That they're trapped by, because of multiple scattering and interference, right? They get trapped in some region, right? So they look really quite different. Mm-hmm. Does it make sense? So let me treat. Yeah, no, that's a good question. So let me view conductivity as some effective coupling constant, right? Which depends on the size of the sample, right? So, you know, in the same way how, let's say, in quantum field theory, you can have some subcoupling constant which gets renormalized, right? And then in the RG picture, right, this some phase could be stable or not. Right, so if some perturbation is, let's say, relevant and it wants to bring you to some other phase, right, the phase is unstable, right? In the same way, you can view it, you know, at least qualitatively similar, right? So you start with something which on some scale looks like a metal, but as you change the scale, right, the coupling constant gets renormalized, right? And so and you're driven to the insulating phase. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah, okay, good. And so, and what was the second question?
So the second question is that in two dimensional, why does that direction order is one?
Why is it one? So you see, this correction depends on the, so let me assume that the phase coherence is very good. Right, so that here I should put the size of the sample, right? Then you can see that this correction depends on the size of the sample, right? So if I take big enough sample, this correction would grow, and at some point it would become comparable to the conductivity itself, right? So and this is because it really, right, it really should be viewed as a renormalization of the conductivity. Right. Make sense? Yeah, good. So going back to the three-dimensional case. So in three-dimensional case, you can have, as a function of the energy, right, you can have a change from localized to the extended behavior and LD, right? This is essentially treated as the mean free path, right? So it's some very short scale.
And what is G in the exponential?
So G, let me define it. So I will call little g would be dimensionless conductance. Right, so it's essentially the conductance in the units of V squared over H. At some critical energy, right, let me call it EG, right, you would get transition between insulator and metal. You know, we can ask what are the properties of this transition, right? So is it second order, first order, how does the conductivity vanish as you approach it, right? How does localization length change as you approach it from the insulating side, right? So we can try to ask, what are the properties of this transition? Properties of metal insulator transition. So this is still a problem which is not solved rigorously. So but there is a scaling hypothesis about this theory which we're going to consider now, which works quite well. So
sorry, before we move on, I didn't quite catch the physics argument for why the states at the tails of that energy distribution are more vulnerable to being localized.
Oh, okay, very good point. Yeah. So imagine. So let's consider some band, right, in the metal. And let's consider the states near the bottom of the band, right? So without disorder, it just looks like that, right? So there is some dispersion relation, which is most likely quadratic near the bottom of the band. And then I add some disorder potential, right? Which depends on the coordinates somehow. So it fluctuates, sometimes it fluctuates strongly, right? And so on. So you see that, let's say, If you have some rare minimum of the potential, right, you can create a bound state, right? So because you know that if you have some quantum well, right, you would create a bound state here. Now, what is important, right, is that such bound states come from really rare fluctuations of the potential, so they're quite rare, right? So these bound states have, you know, they happen, but they happen very far from each other, right? So their hybridization is very weak, right? So it's natural to expect that since there are fewer of them, right, and they're weaker hybridized, right, that they would be more subject to localization, because really, you know, really localization is the interplay between some bound states, right, which are hybridized with each other, and there is some energy mismatch, right? And if you have a lot of such states, right, they would easily get hybridized and spread out over the whole system, right? And that's when you would end up in the extended phase. That's why, for example, here, right, you have lots of states, right? They're all hybridized with each other, right? But here, they have density of states is lower, so chance of them hybridizing and spreading over the whole system is smaller. Mm-hmm. So now let's talk about scaling theory of localization. So we are gonna need some coupling constant, right, or some parameter which is gonna change as a function of the system size, and which is a good measure of whether the states are localized or extended. And of course, physically, right, so we'll try to write essentially RG type equation on this quantity. And so, and intuitively it's clear, right, that this quantity should be dimensionless conductance, right? Because it's really, we saw already that when it's large, you're metallic, right? Right, so this is metallic phase, right? When it's small, this is an insulator, and the transition happens at G of the order one. So now it's not at all obvious that this is the only relevant quantity, right? So this is really a hypothesis, right? Which has not been proven, but it works very well, right? So hypothesis is that essentially everything is determined by this coupling constant, right? And as you increase the system size, its change, right, can be expressed in terms of as some function of G as well, right? And G only, right? This is a very strong assumption. So this is our plan, but to motivate it a little bit and to give the conductance another meaning, let's think about things a bit more microscopically for a moment, right? So let's think about really microscopic energy levels and how they spread out and couple between different parts of the systems, right? So microscopic picture. So let's consider a system of size L. And let's ask, so this system is finite, right? So it has discrete energy spectrum. Let's ask what happens, you know, if we consider it as an isolated, right? It has discrete spectrum. And let's ask how these discrete levels, if isolated, right? But if you consider it as a part of bigger system, right? This energy levels would get hybridized, right? With the states outside, they would acquire finite widths, right? And they would leak out to the outside, right? So acquire finite widths if coupled to some bigger system. So, and each level would acquire some width gamma. And so, and obviously the relevant energy scales in this problem are first of all, so relevant scales are first of all level spacing. Right, so which is given by just inverse density of states times the volume of the system, right? And this level width gamma. So how should I estimate this width? So let me link it with the diffusion coefficient on the scale L. Because so what is the width of the level? So essentially it's the inverse time after which you escape, right, from the state. Right? This is really what level width is in quantum mechanics. So it gives you inverse escape time. So let me just go with this intuition and say that okay, gamma should be h bar over escape time. And here escape time means escape time from this system to some outside bigger system. But this I know, right? So I know that escape time is given by the diffusion, right? So I can say that tau escape is just L squared over diffusion coefficient, which is gonna depend on the scale, right, itself. So size dependent diffusion coefficient, this letter. Right? So says dependent diffusion coefficient. So now quite clearly, right, everything is determined by the ratio of these two. Because for example, if so important ratio is gamma over the level spacing. And let me rewrite it. So using this formula, so after some simple algebra, I'll get the following formula. So why is this ratio important? So let's consider limiting cases, right? So if this ratio is much greater than one, it tells me that all the levels are completely broadened, right? They all start overlapping, and I have a continuous density of states everywhere, right? So it means that this system is really well coupled with the rest of my system. So I am clearly in the metallic phase where all the states look extended, right? Extended states. Now, if I consider the opposite limit, right, this tells you that the spectrum, even though you couple it to some bigger system, right, the spectrum somehow still remains discrete, right? So you still have, you know, they're very narrow, they're not overlapping, right? So which really tells you that the states are localized or are becoming localized. Right, and this is because, you know, why is that? So this is because if you're looking at a given part of the system, right, in the localized phase, you can only look at the wave functions which are localized in this block, right? So there is finite number of them, and the effective level spacing would be finite, right? So spectrum would look discrete. But if you have extended system, and if you just pick some block and look at the spectrums there, right, it's going to be continuous because you can couple to all states in the whole system, right? So, but this would mean that the things are getting localized. Right, so this is really, intuitively it's clear that this is the right quantity to look at. Yeah.
So is the reasoning as follows? For example, for a small width, there's a small coupling to the environment, so you'll most likely stay there, so that's a localized state. Is that the connection for small energy width to localized state? Is that the connection?
So, well, this is a good. So, in principle, right, this picture itself does not directly tell you that the state is localized, right? Because we just wrote some very, very naive estimate, right? We said that, okay, so it can diffuse from one side of the from let's say it starts here, it can diffuse to the edge in this time, right? Tau escape. It doesn't mean it's gonna escape, right? But this sets essentially the strength with which it's coupled to the rest of the system, right? So you should think about it. I mean, of course, here I use this picture of the level width, right? But it holds only if I couple the system to something with a continuous spectrum, right? But there is no guarantee, if I'm really in the localized phase, there is no guarantee that I would find a state I can escape to, right? In this case, really the levels would become sharply defined. They would not have finite width, right? So, but the intuitive picture is really that if this gamma is smaller than the level spacing, right, this tells you that the spectrum is discrete, right, locally in this block, and it stays discrete even though you couple it to the bigger system.
I I have a question about this as a function of L. It is the size dependent diffusion coefficient, right?
Yes, yes, yeah.
Where can we see its size dependence from?
So, good point. So, in the perturbative regime, right, we could use this theory, right? So we could, in the perturbative regime, we can find the first correction,
yes.
Right? Then, of course, it's very hard to go beyond that, right? And this is what we are trying to do. So we are trying to formulate some hypothesis, right, which would let us write some equation on how diffusion coefficients or the conductance change.
It's like basically going to renormalization group types.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's what we are trying to do. Yeah. So we're just trying to motivate it, and then we would then we know what to do in some limiting cases of weak disorder and strong disorder, and then we would just interpolate between them and essentially guess some beta function. Now, we've started from now from this really, really microscopic picture, right? And we came up with some quantity. Now, remarkable fact is that this quantity is nothing else but the conductance, right? But the electrical conductance. So let us see it for the case of two special dimensions. Right, so physical quantity, physical meaning is that this ratio is just the conductance. And let's consider case of two special dimensions. So in this case, density of states is just this. So, and this ratio that we defined above, so gamma over delta E of L, is, so I can just use that formula, right, that I have over there. So it's H M over H squared times diffusion coefficient, which is given by V squared tau over 2. And let me write it. So M times VF is Fermi momentum, right? So it's Fermi momentum, PF over H bar. And the other VF times tau would be mean free path, right? So, but this we just saw here, right? That this is the dimensionless conductance, right? So in fact, This microscopic picture is related with some global quantity that is electrical conductance, right? Which is quite remarkable. So now, it's really suggestive, and it really seems this is the only quantity we need to know when we characterize localization of the system, right? So and as we increase the system size, right, this quantity is gonna flow, right, and we can describe this flow in terms of single parameter, right. So hypothesis is that right. So we can describe renormalization of the conductance as a function of system size. We can describe this flow in terms of one single beta function, right? Which would be different in different dimensions. Now, as I said, right? So we know what happens in the limiting cases. So let's just find this this beta function in the limiting cases of very strong and very weak disorder, and then we would make a guess, right, of how to interpolate between these cases. Right, so in the case of, in the deeply localized case, right, we know that the conductance is conductance is exponentially small, right? So using this equation, you can find the beta function, right? And you find that this beta function is just log g plus something small, right? Now, in the case when you are almost metallic, right, if you are almost metallic, then we can use our result, which is perturbative, right? So, and let me illustrate it for the case of two dimensions. So, d equal 2. Right, so then we know that perturbative correction of conductance is given by minus 1 over conductance change of log L, right? Let me write it in such a form. And this is change in the log of conductance, right? So I can write right away that delta log G over delta log L equals minus 1 over G, right? So I know that when G is much greater than 1, right, beta 2 of G equals minus 1 over G, right? So for the case of two special dimensions, right, I have my answer. So let me plot this beta function as a function of log G, right? So at when this is very large, right, this goes as minus 1 over g. And on the other side, when the conductance is very weak, it goes linearly in log g. Right? So it's natural to assume that this beta function remains negative all the way. Right? And it's just connected, such that you're just, even if you start from some state which looks metallic, right, as you increase the system size, your conductance is gonna get smaller and smaller, and eventually you would go into the deeply localized phase. And similarly, you can do this analysis for other spatial dimensions. And in one dimension, you find that the beta function is always very negative. So at large conductance, it goes as minus one over g plus da da da, right? So it goes like this. This is d equal 1. This is d equal 2. And for d equal 3, right, it's different. So if you're metallic, so beta 3 of g equals 1 minus 1 over g, right? So you start from here, but then you can also be deeply insulating, right? And when you interpolate, it's clear you have to cross zero, right? So this is if you're on this side, you're in a stable metallic phase. If you're on this side, you're on the stable insulating phase, and this is the phase transition point, right? This is unstable fixed point, right? So this is the phase transition point. This scaling theory might seem innocent, but in fact, right? So you can push it further, and you can produce predictions, for example, for the behavior of the conductivity near the critical point, right? From which you would find. So I'm not gonna go into that, but you would find that sigma as a function of g minus gc, right? It goes essentially vanishes as some power law, right, as you approach the transition, right? So which tells you that the transition is continuous, so which is not at all obvious, right? And similarly, on the insulating side, you can predict that the localization length diverges, right? So if you look at the localization length of GC minus G, right, you'll find that it diverges with the same exponent. So which is quite a concrete prediction. And in general, right, it tells you that it suggests, right, that below spatial dimension 2, everything is localized, right, and you can describe the flow of the conductance, and above two dimensions you have this critical point.
So can
the infinity behave
G minus
G
in power? What is the letter?
Power S.
S.
Uh-huh. Yes. Of course. It's very hard to calculate this power, right? But let's say one prediction we can get is the relation between different, right? Between how localization length diverges on the insulating side and how the conductivity vanishes on the metallic side.
But apparently there are some results that was calculated in power of epsilon.
Yes, yes, so yes, yes.
To
yes.
Epsilon expansion, then you have to go to the fifth order.
That I'm not sure about, but yes, this is the only way to calculate it, to try to get some analytical estimate is to do some epsilon expansion near the case of two dimensions. Mm-hmm. So this we will end our two lectures about localization I hope you sort of understood this phenomenon. But if it was a bit confusing, don't worry about it because this topic is actually very difficult, right? And the step that I described, right? Let's say this picture, right, and the existence of the localized phase proved by Anderson, that was done in 1958, right? And the progress was very slow. And for example, the scaling theory of localization emerged only 21 years later, right? So it's really, really, these problems with disorder are really a very different class of problems, right? From, let's say, quantum field theory, right? And they're on some level, right, we still don't know how to approach them very efficiently, right? So and there are still a lot of open problems in this area. So but starting from the next lecture, we'll move on to easier stuff. So we'll talk about graphene, quantum Hall effect, and topological insulator. So that's going to be a lot easier. All right, so yeah.
Today's tutorial will not be devoted to this stuff. Okay.
Yes, because
the spectrum
yeah.
of problems one can oversee is quite complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you want to get FG, mm-hmm. you need to start from the exact density of the state.
Okay. No, this was just to illustrate, right? This was still to illustrate that this ratio, this microscopic ratio that I've introduced, that it's related to the electric conductance. Right? So this is just, when I have this was really just to show you the connection, right, between the global quantity, which is electrical conductance, and the really microscopic quantity, which is this ratio of the level widths to the level spacing, right? So, but once I have my coupling constant, essentially it's a hypothesis, right? That the flow of this quantity would be a function of a single parameter only, right? That it's some single parameter scaling.
I just wonder, why is for this three dimension you have the positive g and negative g, but in two dimension one dimension?
Positive beta function, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, well, well, that was function. Yes. So. No, no, that's a good point. So that you could guess from our perturbative answer, right? So because perturbatively we found that, you know, because essentially what I wrote here, right? This answer, this was just reformulating our weak localization results in terms of this beta function, right? So. From the weak localization, I find that beta function in the case of two dimension, one dimension is negative, right? And in the case of three dimensions, it's positive.
But if you want to compute the beta function, what is the starting point? So, I just don't get this thing.
Right. So, almost metallic regime is where conductance is large, right? So it's here. And here I have a controlled approach, right? So here I can treat interference and localization perturbatively, right? By calculating these corrections in the inverse conductance, right? So here I can find the flow, right? Here I can find how the conductance changes as a function of system size, right? So here this is strict, right? This I know, right? And I also know this, right? So I know that when I'm in the deeply localized phase, I know that the conductance should be exponentially small, right? So it just keeps dropping very quickly, right? So and the rest is just a guess, right? The rest is that, you know, of course it could, right? It might, it could do something crazy like that, right? With a lot of critical points, right? But it seems unlikely. And you know, all that we know, all the numerical simulation, all the experiments tell us that this doesn't happen. That in the case of two dimension, it's just negative, right? And in the case of three dimension, there is a single critical point, right? Now, of course, this is not all there is to it. So if you impose different symmetries, right? If you consider systems with spin orbital interaction and so on, things can change a lot, right? And you can get, let's say, metallic phase in two dimension, but you need different symmetries for that. So, and we will touch on that a little bit when we will talk about graphene and about Dirac materials. Hey guys, any other question?